Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 3, the Birth of Lord Krishna, Text 22. Ayam tvasavyas tava janmano grihe. Shudva grajam se navadit sureshvara. Sate vataram purushai samarpitam.
Sate vataram purushai samarpitam.
Shudva dunai vabhi sarat yuda yuda.
Shudva dunai vabhi sarat yuda yuda.
I am.
This rascal.
But.
Asabhya,
who is not civilized at all. Asura means uncivilized, and Sura means civilized. Tava, of your lordship. Janma, the birth. Now, are. Grihe, into the home. Shudva, after hearing. Agrajan, he,
all the brothers born before you.
Nyavadit, killed. Sura Ishvara, O Lord of the Suras, the civilized persons. Sahi, that uncivilized Kamsa. Te, your avataram, appearance. Purushai, by his lieutenants. Samarpitam, being informed of. Shutva, after hearing. Aduna, now, Eva, indeed, Avisarati, will come immediately, Udayuda, with raised weapons. Translation purported by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O my Lord, Lord of the demigods, after hearing the prophecy that you would take birth in our home and kill him, this uncivilized Kamsa killed so many of your elder brothers. As soon as he hears from his lieutenants that you have appeared, he will immediately come with weapons to kill you. Purport. Kamsa has here been described as asabhya, meaning uncivilized or most heinous, because he killed the many children of his sister. When he heard the prophecy that he would be killed by her eighth son, this uncivilized man, Kamsa, was immediately ready to kill his innocent sister on the occasion of her marriage. An uncivilized man could do anything for the satisfaction of his senses. He can kill children, he can kill cows, he can kill brahmanas, he can kill old men. He has no mercy for anyone. According to the Vedic civilization, cows, women, children, old men, and brahmanas should be excused if they are at fault. But asuras, uncivilized men, do not care about that. At the present moment, the killing of cows and the killing of children is going on unrestrictedly. Therefore, this civilization is not at all human. And those who are in conducting this condemned civilization are uncivilized asuras. Such uncivilized men are not in favor of the Krishna consciousness movement. As public officers, they desire without hesitation that the chanting of the Hare Krishna movement is a nuisance. Although the Bhagavad Gita clearly says, Satatam kirtiyantomam Idhantaschadradabrataha. According to this verse, it is the duty of the Mahatmas to chant the Hare Krishna mantra and to try to spread it all over the world to the best of their ability. Unfortunately, society is in such an uncivilized state that there are so-called Mahatmas who are prepared to kill cows and children and stop the Hare Krishna movement. Such uncivilized activities were actually demonstrated in opposition to the Hare Krishna movement's Bombay Center, Hare Krishna Land, as Kamsa was not expected to kill the beautiful child of Devaki and Vasudev. The uncivilized society, although unhappy about the advancement of the Krishna consciousness movement, cannot be expected to stop it. Yet we must face many difficulties in many different ways. Although Krishna cannot be killed, Vasudeva, the father of Krishna, was trembling because in affection, he thought that Kamsa would immediately come and kill his son. Similarly, although Krishna consciousness movement and Krishna are not different, and no asura can check it, we are afraid that any moment the asuras can stop this movement in any part of the world. So the text again. O my Lord, Lord of the demigods, after hearing the prophecy that you would take birth in our home and kill him, this uncivilized Kamsa killed so many of your elder brothers. As soon as he hears from his lieutenants that you have appeared, he will immediately come with weapons to kill you. Namo Vishnuvraya Krishna Prasthaya Buddha Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shinivadi Paskadhyade Sitarane. Fear is not a very desirable quality. As one becomes purified, then gradually fear goes away. Because we're eternal, therefore there is no reason to be afraid. The only reason why we're afraid is because of our attachment to the material world. Basically due to ignorance, avidya, which has created this asmita, this false ego, which has created attachment and aversion, which has created abhinivesita, our absorption in the material conceptions of life. So because of that, we're afraid. But here we find that Vasudev and Devaki, they're afraid that Kamsa is going to come and kill Krishna. Of course, they know Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but still, because of their absorption and affection and love for Krishna, there's that feeling that he might be killed. So this is quite an advanced level of consciousness that right now we know the story, and therefore we know Krishna is not going to be killed, so we're not very much in anxiety. But luckily, we're hearing about Vasudev, his anxiety, and when we become absorbed in Krishna consciousness and become absorbed also in Krishna's devotees, then we'll be able to feel his anxiety also. Because the Bhagavatam is non-different from reality, and if we can connect with the Bhagavatam, then we connect with the spiritual reality, which includes such great attachment to Krishna that one will feel deep anxiety about Krishna's protection. Just like when the cowherd boys we need a different method of positioning it. When Krishna was and his cowherd boys were by the bank of the Jamuna, and the cowherd boys took a sip of the water and they immediately fell down dead on the Jamuna, on the bank of the Jamuna, Krishna had realized that something's wrong. So he tightened his belt, because Krishna always tightens his belt before he fights a demon. He doesn't want to be embarrassed during the fight. So he always tightens his belt. So you know Krishna is about to fight with a demon when he tightens his belt. So Krishna tightened his belt. I think he was only around 5 years old at the time. He climbed up on the top of a tree, the only tree which was left alive in the district, because Kaliya's poison was so venomous that even the vapor had killed all the vegetation on all sides of the Jamuna. So Krishna climbed up in the tree, jumped into the water, and created a huge splash for a little 5-year-old child. And Kaliya became aware that someone had invaded his territory. He came to find out who it was, and he saw this beautiful little charming boy swimming in the water. Still, he became angry. How dare you invade my territory? And he grabbed Krishna with his coils. He had 100 coils. And Krishna was lifeless. And when the coward boys, because Krishna had revived them, they came back to life, and they saw Krishna in the coils of the Kaliya serpent. They remembered his beautiful pastimes with them, his beautiful smile, his loving exchanges, and they were just overwhelmed with grief. Meanwhile, one man ran into the village of Vrindavan, screaming, Krishna's in the coils of the Kaliya serpent. He's going to be killed. So everyone was completely in anxiety, except for Balaram. Balaram had stayed back because it was his birthday. So we know on Krishna and Balaram's appearance day, that's when this Kaliya pastime took place. So everyone ran out of the village. And the reason why they could follow where Krishna was is because Krishna's footprints were on the ground. Krishna's footprints at that time were all over Vrindavan, because no one would ever disturb the footprints of Krishna. Even the animals, when they saw the footprints, they would avoid stepping on them or disturbing them. So Krishna's footprints were all over Vrindavan. So the coward men and the coward women, they followed the footsteps to the Jamuna, and there they saw Krishna wrapped in the coils of the Kaliya serpent, lifeless. And Mother Jasoda was so distraught that she ran to save her child into the poisonous waters, but she was stopped by Balaram, and then she fainted, meditating on the face of her child. And everyone was crying in great anxiety, except for Balaram, because he knew that this Kaliya serpent is no match for my brother. In any case, Balaram started to tell the residents of Krishna. He said, my dear Krishna, you've been there for 2 hours wrapped in these coils. The residents are almost dead out of grief for you. So, do you want to kill the residents of Vrindavan and stay there, or you want to do something? So then Krishna realized it was a serious situation, so he untangled himself from the coils, and we know the rest. If you don't know what the rest is, I'll bet on Krishna. Anyone want to make a bet? We'll give you good odds, don't worry. So the coward men, the coward women, they didn't know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They thought he was just a charming coward boy that everyone was in love with. Therefore, their grief was much greater than Vasudev's, or fear, because they had no idea that he was God. Therefore, their Mother Jasoda is considered the topmost of all the devotees in Vatsalya Rasa. Vatsalya means, do you know what Vatsalya means? Anyone? What does Vatsalya mean? What's that? Yeah, it means parent. But where does it come from? What's a Vatsa? It's a calf. So it comes from the mother cow, her affection for her calf. The cow is very, very affectionate to a calf. That's why she gives milk. So, Mother Jasoda is considered the most topmost devotee in Vatsalya Ras. And who's number two? Yes. A good guess. And who's number three? What's that? No. Devaki, yes. And number four? Well, you don't have that. You probably don't know that many of them. Make a guess. What's that? Vasudev, yes. Vasudev, then Rohini comes after that. So Vasudev's, because of his knowing Krishna's opulence and Devaki, they're in the top five, but they don't make it to the top one and two. So right now we know about Krishna's opulence, and we've read this Bhagavatam so many times, therefore we're not at all surprised when Krishna wins. But as I said, as we become absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then one lives at the moment. We're living in the future and the past. When one lives at the moment, one can actually experience Vasudev's experience, what he's experiencing, and one can relish that overwhelming love and anxiety for Krishna. Now we're suffering because we're overwhelmingly in anxiety and love with our material existence. But Vasudeva was overwhelmingly in love with spiritual existence and the personification of that being Krishna. So here we have Prabhupada talking about the Hare Krishna movement, that Krishna is taking shelter in the Hare Krishna movement. So what is the Hare Krishna movement? Good question. If anyone asks us, do you belong to the Hare Krishna movement? What would we answer? If you say, but what would you answer? You're shaking your head.
Yeah.
Yes. But what would be our proof that we belong to the Hare Krishna movement? How can you prove you belong to the Hare Krishna movement? What's that? But there are so many people chanting Hare Krishna. There's Mayavadis, they chant all the time. They're famous for chanting Hare Krishna. But they believe that they are Krishna. No, actually, we're so spontaneous, we have no proof at all. We have no membership, unless you became a life member. Actually, I have a life membership. When I was going to the 20-30 years ago, when I was in Bombay at the Juhu Temple, I was trying to get a place to stay. But because I was just an ordinary devotee, they wouldn't give me any place to stay. So then I became a life member. Because at least a life member gets, you know, 3 days to stay. So I actually am a life member. I have my life membership booklet to prove it, in case anyone's doubtful. So we don't have it, but actually real membership in the Hare Krishna movement is a little bit more deeper. It's the qualification of just practicing the sadhana, for instance. That's the beginning of what Prabhupada has given us. In other words, if we're going to protect the Hare Krishna movement, it's not the buildings that we have to protect, because the Hare Krishna movement can go on without buildings. When I first temple, second temple I became president of for a few days, or a few weeks, or a month or something, was in Coconut Grove Park, and we didn't have a temple. So we were sleeping in the park. But I was very proud I was the temple president. There were only two other devotees in the temple, but at that time our temples weren't very big anyhow. So we don't really need a temple to have the Hare Krishna movement, but we need consciousness of Krishna. So the first consciousness of Krishna to protect is our sadhana. There are devotees who believe that they're devotees of Krishna, but they don't chant Hare Krishna. They don't hear about Krishna. They don't do anything for Krishna, but they're deeply in love with him. So therefore we have to protect, if the Hare, that's nice, I mean they have some sentiment to Krishna, but still if the Hare Krishna movement goes on, the minimum is that the devotees, individually ourselves, we have to chant Hare Krishna and follow the principles of devotional service. Then that's not sufficient for really protecting the Hare Krishna movement, because we'll come and go, and when we go, then the Hare Krishna movement will, whatever part of the Hare Krishna movement we've been able to establish, will disappear. Therefore, the next thing is to cultivate spiritual habits that will deepen our chanting and our sadhana. It's nice to come to the program, but of course we have to come to the program regularly, consistently, and then try to hear what's going on. Try to become conscious during the program. As I said the other day, generally speaking, stories are going through our minds all the time. Our past glories or our past failures, the future glories or the anxiety about the failures we may have. So we're never quite here, we're somewhere in the past. We have our own little time machine we're riding all the time, into the future and into the past. And what's going on in the present, we're not really so much conscious of. Including when we're chanting Hare Krishna. So we have to bring our consciousness into the present, and that requires determination and attention and proper use of our intelligence. Then we can deepen our spiritual habits. And there are so many things to do for the body and with our mind and with our intelligence to deepen our spiritual habits. We can try to regulate our lives more. So that regulation means we're doing more during the day focused on Krishna, for Krishna. And with our mind, we could try to think about Krishna and try to feel for Krishna. And with our intelligence, we should try to read Prabhupada's books so we know how to feel for Krishna. We know how to regulate our lives for Krishna. Then, to deepen our spiritual habits, the next thing is to do service in consciousness of Krishna. Not to just work, but to work in consciousness of Krishna with the proper attitude and the proper mood. So it's devotional. We're doing it for Krishna, to please him and his devotees who are pleased when Krishna is pleased. And then, eventually, when we establish the mission, we have our mission in life to spread Krishna consciousness, and we're able to teach others how to establish their mission in Krishna consciousness, then the movement is actually protected. It'll go on, at least for the next 10,000 years. So the Hare Krishna movement is not just some devotees coming and going, sometimes chanting, sometimes reading, it's actually developing spiritual consciousness so that we're absorbed in Krishna consciousness. That's the Hare Krishna movement. Not just bodies wandering around in the temple, but actually devotees thinking about Krishna while they're wandering around in the temple. In other words, that's conscious of Krishna. And there's a process and a science to do that. Of course, the asuras, they are not torturing the devotees like they did in Russia. And giving them drugs to try to help to get them to forget about Krishna. They have much more subtle ways. Advertisements, internet, so many different ways of trying to help us forget about Krishna and get absorbed in doing other things other than trying to become Krishna conscious and serve Krishna. And there, in other words, they're actually trying to kill the Hare Krishna movement. And they've succeeded. So many devotees have fallen victim to so many allurements offered by the asuras. But still the Hare Krishna movement is going on because there are still devotees trying to sincerely advance in Krishna consciousness. But we should understand what will actually protect our own consciousness of Krishna, which will actually, because everyone is, just like in the body, is made of different cells. So the Hare Krishna movement is made of different devotees. And we happen to be one of the devotees. So if we want to protect the Hare Krishna movement, we have to protect our consciousness of Krishna and develop it. Then Krishna consciousness will become stronger in the world. Krishna could appear all at once and enlighten everyone, but he's not doing that. He's doing it through us, the devotees. So as much as we become Krishna conscious, that's to the extent that the Hare Krishna movement is really expanding. As much as people, and including ourselves, are taking shelter of Krishna through hearing and chanting, through developing spiritual habits, through service, through association with the devotees, and through developing a burning desire to help others become Krishna conscious, to that extent the Hare Krishna movement will prosper and develop. Otherwise, there may be so many buildings, there may be so much money, there may be so many properties and so many assets, but those things are just, without Krishna consciousness, they're just external. They're just monuments to the former Hare Krishna movement. And they won't last either. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you so much for the lecture. You mentioned this not needing to actually have temples to go on with the Krishna consciousness, with the Krishna consciousness movement. I was told that before, when our temple in our country closed, that we don't need a temple, we don't need deities to worship. Krishna is in his name. But it seems to me that Prabhupada did not consider us to be such elevated devotees, so that we don't need temple, we don't need deities to worship, because he opened so many temples. So why would he open them if we don't need them?
Well, we don't need them in the sense that we can go on with our Krishna consciousness without them. But
yeah,
they
but
certainly
us at the level that we are.
Yeah, anyway.
Do we need them or not really?
No, we need them when we don't need them. If we're forced not to have them, well, we can go on. But they're certainly useful for our development of Krishna consciousness, deity worship, regulation of our lives and our minds are necessary for us to develop Krishna consciousness. It's certainly easier when we have temples and service to the deities, etc. But the Hare Krishna mantra in Dwarpa Yuga, temple worship was the main focus. And in Treta Yuga, it was sacrifice. And in Satya Yuga, it was meditation. So we can't do any of those things very well. But at least if we have temples, we can try to develop those things. But if we don't have them, we can still chant Hare Krishna. Dhruva Maharaj, he didn't have a temple, but he constructed a deity from the Jamuna, sand, and he worshipped that deity. It's not that we shouldn't worship a deity, but we can somehow or another, in any circumstance, create our own little temple and worship Krishna in that situation. Even in jail, sometimes the devotees, They chant 64 rounds or more than that in the jail. They're more Krishna conscious in the jail than they were outside the jail, because they're not distracted at all. So they're useful, they're helpful for us, but if they were taken away, we can still go on with our Krishna consciousness movement. Not that we want them to be taken away, but we should understand Krishna consciousness is not limited to any circumstance, that's all.
I have one more question. You mentioned, how do we prove that we are members of this Krishna consciousness movement?
Yes.
And the question is, why do we need to prove this to anyone else?
Well, maybe if you get drafted and they say, well, members of the Hare Krishna movement don't have to be drafted,
Hypothetically, but now, why would we need to prove our faith to God, our feelings for Him to someone else? Because being in the movement doesn't make us faithful. We might just be, you know, have the membership card, but not actually practice.
Well, membership, we're talking about membership in a realistic way, that there should be some criteria to be a member. Like, for instance, you understand what the Hare Krishna movement is, how it's organized, what your duties to the Hare Krishna movement are, what you expect to get in return, what the different types of membership are, what the Hare Krishna movement, what its purpose is, what its mission is, what its vision is, how it communicates it, how it organizes around it, how it applies it to the society, what it does and what it doesn't do.
But I don't understand why do I need to prove to someone else that I'm a member?
You don't, but then you won't be a member.
Why not? I can be a member and don't brand it to everyone else. Look, I am a member.
You don't have to brand it to everyone else. Just like you don't have to brand how, you don't have to go and tell everyone how you were in ecstasy today chanting japa. But, you know, you have to chant japa. Whether you tell everyone how much ecstasy you were in, still you have to chant japa.
Yeah, but you mentioned about proving to someone that we are members, that I did not understand this concept.
No, I just asked you, how can you prove? Because, you know, if you're not a... If someone says, you know, are you a member of the Hare Krishna movement?
I say yes.
Yes, and they say, well, can you show me some way of showing it, that of proving it?
And they say, I don't need to. Why do I need to do this? To someone else. That's what I don't understand.
Because someone is in charge of the Hare Krishna movement, and they establish criteria by which you're a member or not. In other words, fancifully I may say that I'm a member, but if there's actually a membership program going on, official membership based upon certain criteria, then my saying I'm a member is just my fanciful declaration if there's actually a membership program for the Hare Krishna movement. And, you know, just like people say, well, I don't have to go to the temple, I don't have to do anything. I'm always thinking about Krishna. I don't even have to chant japa. I'm just always thinking about Krishna. But, you know, we expect people externally to have beads, to follow certain principles. You know, you're in the bar and you're distributing books in the bar and there's this devotee who's saying, I'm always Krishna conscious. And he's drinking beer, and he has his three girlfriends there. And you say, you know, I thought you were a devotee. Of course I'm a devotee. I'm always thinking about Krishna. These are just external. I don't have to prove it to anyone. Yes, you don't have to prove it to anyone, but I won't believe that you're really a member of the Hare Krishna movement, because you're not following any of the program of the Hare Krishna movement. So there should be some objective criteria. So that if someone, you know, walks into the bank with his neck beads on and the machine gun in his hand and his bead bag around his neck, chant Hare Krishna, put your hands up. And the police and you arrest him and say, who are you? He said, I'm a member of the Hare Krishna movement. Prove it. You don't have to prove it. Anyone who thinks they're a member of the Hare Krishna movement, they're automatically a member. No, in certain instances, we should be able to say at least this person is not a Hare Krishna member. He doesn't follow the principles. He never even asks for membership. So he's just claiming he's a member, but he's not a member. Our members don't usually rob banks. Anything else? Kuala, Grandaraj, Mad Bhagavitam, Kijaj.